Russia's credit isn't junk, but it's getting closer.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California and is supported by Citrix with GoToMeeting, connecting people and businesses worldwide in face-to-face online meetings. More at GoToMeeting.com.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with a global perspective on business and economics. In a surprise move today, Russia's central bank raised its key interest rate from 7 to 7.5%. This comes as investment capital increasingly leaves Russia, given the turmoil surrounding Russia and Ukraine. The credit rating agency S&P today also downgraded Russian debt. Theo Leggett with our partner, the BBC, is following this from London. Theo, good morning.
Good morning, David.
Looks like Russia found itself needing to suddenly raise interest rates today.
Well, Russia is facing economic pressures from all quarters at the moment, and that's partly due to the overall weakness of the Russian economy. It's been growing very, very slowly. Inflation has been rising. Imports have been rising faster than exports. So there's a fundamental weakness there. But also there is the problem of the situation in Ukraine. And so today we've had a lowering of the credit rating for Russia by Standard & Poor's in recognition of the increased danger of investing in Russia.
Now, when that happens, when a credit rating is lowered, this increases costs for Russia, the government, and Russian businesses.
Well, in theory, it should. I mean, this is what investors are supposed to take account of when they're deciding whether or not to invest in a country. But you have to take that with a little pinch of salt in this case. Investors already know that tensions are rising within Russia and in terms of Russia's relationship with Ukraine, and they've taken that into account. In fact, many investors are already leaving Russia. It's already seen $50 billion taken out of the country in the first quarter. And one of the things that Standard & Poor's has said is that it expects this capital outflow to continue. So in terms of Russia itself and the government's own borrowing, it's not actually likely to have that much impact in the short term because Russia depends very heavily on imports of oil and gas. It gets a lot of foreign revenue from those sources. It has relatively little foreign debt and it's perfectly capable of servicing that debt. It also has very large currency reserves. So it isn't likely to put Russia in at risk of default, certainly not in the short term, even though its credit rating is now just one notch above junk.
The BBC's Theo Leggett in London. Thank you very much.
Thank you, David.
Just about a month before a trial was set, some of the top companies in California's Silicon Valley have settled a class action lawsuit alleging the companies colluded to keep a lid on pay for engineers and other top workers. Google, Apple, Intel, and Adobe reportedly agreed to pay something in the $300 million range. This covers 64,000 employees who claimed that the companies had worked out a system to avoid poaching talent. The settlement is about a tenth what the plaintiffs were looking for if it went to trial. Now let's check the numbers. The FT 100 in London is now down 0.3%. The main index in Hong Kong fell 1.5%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are down.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by United Healthcare, with information on doctors, treatment options, and cost estimates for patients to make educated health decisions. Online at uhc.com. By CSX, delivering 2.6 million containers of goods, providing essentials to move the economy forward. CSX, how tomorrow moves. And by Emerald Data Solutions, makers of board docs and supporters of the NSBA Initiative for Excellence in Public Education. StandUpForPublicSchools.org.
It's been about 8 years since Al Gore's An Inconvenient Truth came out. The doc was a call to action on climate change. Now the cable network Showtime is trying it with a 9-part docu-series called Years of Living Dangerously. As Marketplace's Sarah Gardner reports from our sustainability desk, one thing we've learned since Inconvenient Truth is that communicating about climate change is tougher than most people thought.
Duh, it's complicated. After years of dire warnings, about half of Americans worry about climate change only a little, if at all, according to a Gallup poll. Have climate communicators goofed up?
There's three things that we know that you shouldn't do.
Ed Maybach heads George Mason's Center for Climate Change Communication. One, he says, dump the scientific jargon. Two, don't bury people in numbers.
And perhaps most importantly, you shouldn't make it all about plants, penguins, and polar bears, because that's not really what most of us cared most deeply about.
Here's another one from Elke Weber at Columbia's Earth Institute. Scaring people with doomsday scenarios can backfire.
Scare campaigns work extremely well when there's a simple thing that you can do to remove the danger. But if it takes protracted action, you know, over time, nobody wants to sort of feel bad for that length of time. People just tune out.
But the real challenge, says Yale's Dan Kahan, is to talk about climate change in ways that don't push people's cultural and political buttons. Yeah, I know, easier said than done. But it's really important, Kahan says, because his research shows the way people view climate change is tied to their values.
And remarkably, the more proficient somebody is at making sense of empirical data, the more pronounced this tendency is going to be.
Meaning you may get science, but if you're a free market individualist, Al Gore and all the climate studies in the world aren't going to move you.
Our ability to live is what is at stake.
Bob Lalish, director of science communications at the Nature Conservancy, is convinced real progress will come at the local level, where people are already confronting drought and rising seas and looking to community leaders for solutions.
We need to show people that the people they respect and trust are paying attention to climate science and using it to make decisions about issues they're dealing with right now and issues in the future.
Lalish may have a point. On this Sunday's episode of Years of Living Dangerously, a congressman from sandy-ravaged Staten Island poo-poos the chances for national action. Washington, he says, is not real life. I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
Ongoing revelations from Edward Snowden about U.S. government spying on all manner of communications has ignited a discussion about re-engineering the Internet to make it less American. From Germany to Brazil, there's been talk about creating homegrown data networks to thwart American spies. Now Russian President Putin hinted Russia is thinking along similar lines. Yesterday, Putin labeled the Internet a, quote, CIA project. The Internet is an outgrowth of DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency in the U.S. The concern is that a system of national internets could be easier for home governments to monitor and censor. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
Who needs a bachelor's degree when you're making big bucks at a promising job?
We've always thought that a four-year degree is the answer to get a good-paying job, and now as we're experiencing, it's not always the right answer.
I'm David Gura. The requirements for middle-skilled jobs, next time on Marketplace from APM.